This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Green Talks. This is WRFL Lexington, and it's 3 o'clock, and you're listening to Green Talks, where we explore the people and projects that are using the environmental stewardship fee to promote sustainability in the UK community. I'm your host, Sophie Bevan, and I'm the current director of outreach for the Student Sustainability Council. The funding for the projects featured on our show come from the environmental stewardship fee, a $4 fee to all UK students that they pay along with tuition each semester. The ESF, which is expected to generate approximately $190,000 by the end of the school year, is distributed by the Student Sustainability Council, hereafter the SSC, for various projects that enhance the culture and sustainability here at the University of Kentucky. So this week, I'm joined by Claire Richoff, and she's an assistant professor here at UK in the Department of Entomology. And her project took place over the summer, and it was a four-session beekeeping workshop. So Claire, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So first, why did you choose to have an on-campus beekeeping workshop?
So we had a couple different goals for this workshop. One was to make sure we were accessible to UK students. So we figured if we're on campus, then the students were on campus and we could catch them for our workshop. And we ended up having undergraduates, grad students, staff members, and faculty attend the workshop. The other reason we wanted to do this workshop is because we felt, as bee researchers, that we had kind of a unique perspective on beekeeping and, some advice and thoughts to give to people that were thinking of starting beekeeping, specifically from a sort of scientific research perspective.
That's awesome. Thanks. So can you just talk a little bit about, or as much as possible, about the importance of bees on ecosystems? Because I know that that's like a really hot topic right now. So if you could put some perspective to the listeners about like really the importance of them.
Yeah, so I guess one thing I want to point out, you know, we were talking about a honeybee beekeeping workshop. That was sort of the goal of our sustainability project over the summer. But there are a lot of different types of bees. There are about 4,000 species in the U.S., and bees are really important for pollination of both flowers and crops that produce flowers in order to make fruits. So a lot of people think about honeybees, and they think about honey, which is delicious. But really, the more important function of honeybees is to transfer pollen from one flower to another so that a plant can make a fruit.
Awesome. Yeah. And so if we don't have those pollinators, then I've read that we would have to pollinate all of our crops by hand, which sounds nearly impossible. So they're really vital to the ecosystem and to human services.
Yeah, we're really bad at pollinating flowers, actually, compared to bees. And I think one of the best statistics is that one out of every three bites of food you eat requires a pollinator. So
wow.
You can think about how boring your diet would be without them.
Yeah, they'd be very bland. So also, bees were just recently put on the endangered species list. So can you talk a bit about why they're endangered and what's happening to their habitat?
Yeah, so this is another interesting point, of course. The bees that are included in the endangered species list are not honeybees. So the one that received a lot of attention recently was the rusty patch bumblebee. So this is a kind of bumblebee, a different species than one that people are used to seeing around here, but related. There are also some bee species on the endangered species list that are native to Hawaii. There are a lot of different threats to bees in general. This tends to affect a lot of different pollinator species, so bees, other types of pollinating insects, including honeybees. So they're all sort of facing some of the same problems. Some of those are lack of nutrition, so not enough flowers to feed everybody. Pesticides can also play a role in harming or killing bees or making them sick, so it's harder for them to collect pollen and forage. And there are a lot of diseases that we also don't really understand and have a hard time managing among our pollinator species.
Okay, so does like the beekeeping workshops helps create more habitat for them, correct? Or what exactly is the role of beekeeping and like having these classes?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, most people keep honeybees for their own purposes, you know, because they want to make honey and it's fun. But as beekeepers, we're stewards to pollinators. So we have to be responsible in the way that we keep bees. If you have a colony that develops a disease or has parasites, those can be spread to other honeybee colonies. There's also evidence that viruses in honeybees can be transmitted to other types or species of bees as well. So I think that the role that beekeepers play is sort of, whether they like it or not, they have an active role in, you know, how bees are managed and how diseases are transmitted to other species as well.
Yeah, definitely. So can you just give like the basics of beekeeping, like what is the process that one goes through?
That's a complicated question.
Yeah.
So, yeah, essentially, all beekeepers do is they take bees and put them in an environment that's just easier to manage. So bees naturally, and again, we're talking about honeybees, naturally live in tree cavities, hollowed out tree cavities. So essentially, all a managed beehive is a box that sort of looks like a cavity, is about the same size as a cavity, but it's easy to open and move the honeycomb around so that you can remove and extract the honey when you want to. And you can also manage the bees for various diseases because you're able to access that hive very easily. So that's really all we're doing. The bees do the rest of the work. They build all the comb inside the colony. They collect all their own food. And so all we have to do is make sure that they're healthy enough to do their job.
Okay, so really we're just making like the infrastructure for them.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, so back to more specifically of the four sessions that you led, what did those look like? Like, what exactly did you all do in those?
Yeah, so we actually ended up collapsing the four sessions into 2 days over a weekend.
Okay.
And the reason was we wanted to have time to do some lectures, but also have time for people to go out and look at the bee colonies themselves. So our lectures focused on a variety of topics. We talked about basic honeybee biology and evolution. We talked about bee safety. This is a big issue for new beekeepers, how to prevent being stung. Also, of course, beekeeping requires using a smoker, which is fire. So those are important issues. We talked a bit about bee diseases that are commonly encountered, and also what does the sort of first year of beekeeping look like? You know, there's timing associated with purchasing equipment and getting the bees at the right time of year so that the colony can flourish.
Yeah, okay. And so that sounds like a really beneficial class because it wasn't just strictly how to beekeep. It was put it more into like an entire perspective, mm-hmm. which is really nice. And you also said that it was students, faculty, and community members, correct, that participated?
Yeah, everyone really from the UK community was represented. So we had some staff, we had faculty, and both graduate and undergraduate students. So we got a whole range.
That's awesome. That's a really good like representation of UK as a whole. So yeah, kind of back to some challenges. I know you talked about not being stung and like fire, but are there any other like major challenges that come with beekeeping?
Yeah, so really the hardest thing is keeping the bees healthy and keeping them alive. So for, you know, one of the reasons that this type of course is really necessary is that hobby beekeepers lose about 50% of their colonies every year. So the mortality rate's really high. And as a new beekeeper, that can be really discouraging. Mm-hmm. You put all the time and money in and then the colony dies. So those were sort of, you know, we can't necessarily prevent all of the problems, but there are ones that we can prevent, for example, treating for parasitic mites that transmit disease and weaken the bees. And so our goal here was to try to distill all the information down that's out there. There's a tremendous amount of information on how to keep bees. But we wanted to try to pull out what we thought were the most essential points for a new beekeeper, because otherwise you can't wade through all of that information and really decide for yourself what's important if you don't have that experience.
Okay, yeah. So like, what are some of those main things that people need to get started with it?
So you need basic levels of equipment. So there are sort of hive components that you can purchase and assemble yourself and paint. There are all sorts of different gadgets and tools that beekeepers use. Only a few of those are really essential, so that's part of it. One of the reasons we talked about safety is that you need to purchase equipment to protect yourself from being stung, that sort of thing. And you also need to know something about getting honeybees. So you can purchase bees on the internet, really, like anything else. You can get them locally. And so one of the reasons we talked about bee biology and evolution is we wanted to give people a perspective of on what kind of bees are out there. And when people tell them that they're purchasing a bee with a certain characteristic, how sort of serious they can take that advice or that information. So all of that put together, you can get I guess I'm not supposed to talk about money, but I can tell you that to start a bee colony doesn't require a lot of funds. Okay. If you just have the right equipment. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's really encouraging that it's not this huge intimidating project, that it's more of like a realistic thing that people can do.
Yeah, and timing really matters. And that was sort of, we talked a lot about planning in the fall and winter for colonies to start in the spring, because really early in the spring is where the bees are building up their population numbers. And so you want to really make sure you have them ready to go at that time of year.
Okay, so if someone were to start their own, you would recommend starting in the fall and winter?
Yeah, so you spend the fall and winter, you know, tracking down your equipment, putting everything together, doing some painting and stuff to make it ready to go. You also have to order bees, and people run out. It's like any other resource. Sometimes there aren't enough. So the sooner you do that, the better. Usually late fall, early, really in the early winter, December, January is when you can start placing those orders. And then the bees usually arrive, so where you can pick them up and install them in your colony sometime in early April. Okay. So that's the kind of timeline.
I'm actually just really curious too, how do you like get the bees? Like, and they're live creatures, so how do they just ship them to you?
Yeah, so they're in terms of the sort of, you know, large volume of bees you need to get a hive started, there are two main ways. One is called a bee package. So that's really literally like 3 pounds of worker bees and a queen. you can, you basically go and pick it up and it comes in a little box, and you take those and transfer them to your colony and then they get started. You can also buy small miniature colonies, half-size colonies. Those are nice because the queen is already established and laying eggs. It's faster for those to develop than those packages. So actually, for brand new beekeepers, we recommend going the sort of small nucleus colony route.
Yeah.
It's easier.
Okay.
You can also buy full-size colonies, but those are a little bit
It's like
more
a lot to manage, just especially with your first time around. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, we're actually going to take a break really quick, and then we'll come right back and continue talking. Hello, we're back and on Green Talks, and with us here today, we have Claire Richoff, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Entomology here at UK. And we were just talking about her project, which was over the summer and was a beekeeping. So we're just going to hop right back in. So you talked in your project proposal how there's a great need for having these classes. So is there just not many of them offered, or just not in this location specifically?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there are a lot of beekeeping classes out there. I think, as I mentioned in the beginning, this one was unique in that we were on campus, and so the goal was to be accessible to especially younger students. That's one thing that people may not realize, but the beekeeping community typically doesn't have a lot of young people involved. It's not a hobby that people get into when they're in their 20s and 30s. It's sort of a lifetime hobby that people start when they're in their 60s, which is unfortunate. But so we're hoping by kind of targeting a younger audience that sort of promotes younger people to start beekeeping sooner. And the other thing that I think is really important, there are a lot of great courses out there, but one thing we wanted to add was our sort of unique perspective as researchers. Most people don't think about it, but a bee researcher is really a beekeeper, and our livelihood depends on the bees and the bee health. Unlike other beekeepers, we're not necessarily interested in producing honey or really producing a lot of excess bees. But we study behavior in my lab, and when bees are sick, their behavior changes and becomes kind of unpredictable. And so if our bees are unhealthy, we really can't do the research we want to do. So we kind of have a different approach, a more, I guess, a health and behavior focus than a lot of people who manage honeybees. And we were hoping that brought a unique perspective to this particular workshop.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's cool, too, how you're bringing it to a college campus and it's really accessible because I am a college student and I would never think of like starting my own beehive and everything. But with this class, it makes it really easy to do that, which is really nice. Mm-hmm. So you talked about your research a little. What more specifically are you doing with that? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So our lab works mostly on honeybee behavior and neuroscience. So a lot of the questions we ask are really fundamental science questions. So how do social interactions affect the brain? How do those affect individual behavior? And the reason that we study honeybees in part is because they are such amazing social creatures. They live in these colonies with 40,000 individuals. Different individuals have specialized roles. They're really highly dependent on social interactions to make the colony function. So that makes bees pretty special just across, you know, the animal kingdom and comparable to other types of social organisms. In our work, we also work more specifically with bee health-related questions, too. So one of the behaviors we've been focused on for the last number of years is aggression, which is kind of everyone's least favorite behavior if you're a beekeeper. But it's actually a pretty interesting behavior for a lot of reasons. And from a health perspective, it's really important because it seems that more aggressive colonies and more aggressive bees are actually healthier. We see that in a few different ways. They tend to produce more honey. They tend to have larger colonies. And they seem more resistant to pesticides even. So there are a lot of features about aggression that seem to reflect the health of the bees. And so we're studying those relationships as well.
Okay, that's awesome. That's really an impressive way to go about studying psychology because you're using insects, but they can be really applicable to, you know, humans.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and we can manipulate entire societies with the honeybee, which when you think about that, it's pretty interesting way to test
crazy.
Some cool questions. Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So how did you get interested in bees? What was your start with that?
Yeah, so I started studying honeybees as an undergraduate, and that will be hopefully relatable to some people in the audience. So I just got into a lab. I was interested in behavior from kind of early on, and so I was working on swarming behavior in honeybees and how that behavior is coordinated. So that's what I did for my undergraduate project. And then I actually spent my PhD working on spiders, which was also a lot of fun.
Interesting.
Happy to talk about that whenever. It's not the focus of my work right now, but when I finished my PhD, I wanted to study more neuroscience-related questions. I got really interested in learning more about the brain. And the honeybee has been used for a number of years as a model species for a lot of neuroscience and social neuroscience research. And so that's kind of how I got into bees. So I've studied insects and arthropods for a long time, but honeybees I've sort of come back to a couple different times, just opportunistically.
Yeah, definitely. I think bees are definitely the coolest. I don't know. Personally a fan. So back to more of the beekeeping class specifically. Sorry, we're just kind of hopping around, but...
No, it's okay.
Would you hope to have an actual UK course on this? Or what would your ideal situation be with a beekeeping class?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. So one of the reasons we did this workshop was to try to figure out what kind of interest we'd have in this type of course. I would love to have a beginning beekeeping course of some kind. You know, there are a lot of logistical considerations about when that should be offered, spring or fall or summer, mm-hmm. How big that class should be, the kind of things we'd want to cover. And so we were sort of using this as a way to pilot that type of larger class. So that's something that's certainly on the docket. We had some undergraduates enroll this summer, but not as many as I would have liked. And I'm hoping to get more feedback from undergraduates about what they would like to see or what you would like to see as a framework for this type of course.
Yeah, definitely. I think that would be really awesome to have an entire semester devoted to that because, I know a two-day workshop is kind of fast, but it's very effective. But I think having an entire semester would really make it more of habitual in students and more of a systematic way to go about protecting bees.
Yeah, and it's nice, the longer time frame you have, the more kind of different hands-on things you can get accomplished with bee management in particular. There are a lot of things you have to do to a colony as you're managing it that are seasonal, so it's not something that you can just do every day. It needs some time to be able to get
definitely.
To the appropriate time to do those things. So
definitely. Well, I think that'll be a really great course here, so I hope that happens.
Yeah,
good
cross
luck
your
on
fingers.
That. So I guess just kind of... a last thing is, what does the future of bees look like? And what do you think realistically the future looks like for them?
Oh man, I wish I could answer that question accurately. I don't know. I think I'm really glad to see that there's so much increased interest in bees and pollinators more generally, both in terms of the public interest and in terms of funding for research. Really, you would be shocked, despite how long people have been managing honeybees. There are some major gaps in our knowledge about their health, about their behavior. And so there's an increasing amount of work and research on those areas, and that's going to be necessary for sustaining our honeybee populations in particular. And I think it's really important that people understand how vital honeybees in particular are for agriculture. So we've sort of designed our agricultural system in a lot of ways to depend on honeybees. And we could change that, but that's a big change. And so I think working towards that level of sustainability is going to be really critical. And I think the future will depend on the investments people make in those outcomes.
Yeah, definitely. So is there any direct actions that people can take right now to help that?
Yeah, so people, I think responsible beekeeping is a good one. So making sure your colonies are healthy, making sure you're being a good neighbor and a good steward for the bees. People have been planting a lot of pollinator gardens in their yards. That provides food resources, which is helpful for bees and other important pollinator species. So those are a couple things. I think staying informed, too, and also advocating for funding for this type of research is really critical.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you, Claire, so much. That was really interesting. If you have any other last minute plugs or anything about bees in general, or
I don't know if I have any last minute plugs, but I'm always happy to take questions. If anyone ever wants to contact me via email, or if students are interested in the lab, I'm always happy to talk.
Okay, awesome. Thanks. So just for some closing announcements, the SSC is currently providing funding for departments on campus to invite a guest speaker for their students. So if you are interested in this or would like to know more, please email the SSC at uksustainabilitycouncil@gmail.com. All of the SSC meetings are open to the public, so you can keep up with our current projects, meeting times, meeting minutes, and events, and how to submit your own project proposal at our website. And you can also stay up to date on us by liking us on Facebook or following us on Instagram. So thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week to talk about another project.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm and, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to WRFL.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.